Always Woolen to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazz Amaja, Chris Fuchs, John Lloyd, Atif Sheik, Justin Maitner, Gavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Mike Franz, Joe Mickendo, Trayvon Brady, Dylan D'Antonio, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, T. Hamill, Becca Zeifel, Nicholas Casso, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Fansler, Jared Gibbs, and Erica Flynn. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Previously on Smallville.
I knew you would return, my son.
I felt as though something was calling me home.
Everything we've been through with Jor-El, I just wanted to close that chapter in my life.
There's a darkness in me that I can't always control.
Well, you certainly see me at my worst.
And at your best.
Three relics hidden around the world by scientifically advanced ancient cultures.
That one means fire, and the one up there, that's air. Put them together.
Where is it? God help me.
By now, you'd know that Lana's nothing more than my mother's pawn.
Martha Clark still feels responsible for my heart problems.
If you found out something someone didn't want you to know about them, would you tell them?
What'd I do?
You trusted me.
I can't let you walk out, not again. That's why this time will be different.
This time? You're an amazing young man, Clark. You make life and death decisions every day. Trust your gut.
Greed will drive others to hunt the stones, and will drive the world to famine, war, and the Earth's ultimate destruction.
Where is the stone?
I gave it to Lana. Well, she is the chosen one, and we all know that.
Clark's more connected to this than any of us. It's Clark. He's...
Man can't deny his true nature.
It's time to fulfill my destiny.
I am the villain of the story.
And now, the season finale of Smallville.
Welcome to Always Woolen to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I have a very special guest with me this week. You might know her from Geek History Lesson, Jawin YouTube channel, and the Redshirt Diaries. We have Ashley Victoria Robinson. What's up, Ashley?
I'm doing so good. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I have been a huge fan of all your nerd stuff for a long time, so very honored to have you on the podcast this week.
Sweet. Let's hope I don't screw it up.
The pressure's on now.
I know.
So Superman, Smallville, right? Where do you stand on it? Like, Superman is a character, Smallville, like, what is your Superman fandom, and how did that, where has that intersected with Smallville for you in the past?
I am a late-in-life Superman convert. I am a very moody and sad person, and so as a teenager, Batman was pretty much my jam. And in the very stereotypical way, I enjoyed the fact that it was grounded and that we like to suffer the delusion that we could all be Batman someday, despite the fact that it's impossible. And I very broad strokes thought Superman was silly. I thought he was not... it was hard to have pathos for him. He was a difficult character. And I fully believe that there were no good Superman stories. And then I'm originally from Canada. And when I moved to the United States, my first job after I graduated university was at a comic book store. So I had to start reading some Superman stories. And I was like, oh, okay, like Red Sun is fine.
And of course.
Then Red Sun is a great Superman book to give to people who don't like Superman, because it's a little twist on the story and it's an examination of the character, but it still has the big action pieces that one expects from the Superman, that sort of archetypical character. Mm-hmm. And then I met Jason Inman, who is a former co-host of DCL Access, my co-host on Geek History Lesson. And Jason is from a farm in Kansas that is off a gravel road. Superman is his favorite character. And he was like, well, let me tell you why Superman is great. So following that, I read All-Star Superman, which I maintain is the greatest Superman story of all time. Issue 6, where Pa Kent dies and Superman is unable to help him because he dies from a heart attack. And it's such a tiny thing. And despite the fact that Superman has all these powers, he is powerless to help the most important man in his life. I really resonates with me and I think is incredibly powerful. And that was around the time that Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter's Action Comics run was going on. And Lana was the star of that for a really, really cool arc because she is, I think, an environmental engineer. Someone is screaming at their podcast listening device because they know exactly what her job was at the time. But she's on a dig in an exotic locale and they discover a tiny little blue creature named Baka, who she calls in Superman to help her with because they think Baka needs to be rescued, but he's actually the prince of this subterranean civilization, and it's a really great arc, and the character looks absolutely amazing. He looks like little baby Nightcrawler, and Nightcrawler is my favorite X-person. So I loved that. In fact, the first commission that I ever got from a comic book artist was Aaron Cooter drew jeans and t-shirt Superman of the New 52, and Baka is like running in front of him with a cape tied around his neck. And that, for me, was my real intro into the character. And that's probably because I come at comics from... This is going to make me sound like a real douche who thinks very highly of myself. And I don't mean it that way, but I kind of come at it from a more literary perspective than a pop culture perspective because all of my higher education is in like theater and English. When I was studying English, my focus was Arthurian legends. So like I love a hero's journey and I'm always looking for like those kind of themes. So once that was sort of broken open to me in a non-stereotypical way for Superman, that was when I really started to connect with the character and really like him and understand the value of presenting us with that type of person and the choice that he makes to be good when he could truly he could be or do anything, but he chooses to look after the people who need him. And then when DC Rebirth started a few years ago at the time of this recording, hi, future people, they introduced John Kent. And I am like notoriously, I hate Connor Kent, who is the OG Superboy. But John Kent is, right, the son of Clark and Lois. And I think he's completely amazing. And I didn't know that I needed him in any way. But I love him so much. I think he's so great and wonderful. I have his action figure. But with Smallville, it's really funny. So being from Canada, we don't get the same type of content and we don't get it distributed in the same way. I'm sure Smallville aired, but I was truly not aware of it until I moved to the United States in 2010.
Now, you didn't live anywhere near Vancouver, did you?
No, I didn't. I lived in Ontario, which is above, I'm so bad at American geography, Michigan?
Yes, it's on the, if you're looking East at Coast. The map, people, that's on the right side.
Yeah.
And Vancouver's on the left side. So you really were a country apart from Smallville. I was going to say, if you lived in Vancouver, you would have found out about Smallville.
Truly, but I probably would have worked on it. But so I literally never heard of it. And then I think that was the last or maybe the second to last season by that point when I had come here. And then the criticism that I'd always heard was, or that I heard once I was aware of it, is that Superman was, he was never Superman. And I was like, but what's the point of making a Superman show if he's not going to be Superman? Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because the other sort of overarching thing that I hear about Smallville is how great Erica Durance is as Lois. And from people who have a deeper Superman fandom than me, she is a very lauded presence on the show. And then, you know, some other weird things that cast members are up to right now, but we won't talk about that because it's unsavory. And
very good. Very good.
Yep. I worked in another comic book shop in L.A. called Earth 2, specifically the Sherman Oaks location, which, if people don't know, is co-owned by Geoff Johns, who had a big hand in Smallville and writing a lot of really epic comic book runs. And in that shop, not for sale, is the Justice Society painting from Smallville. So a lot of my early 20s was spent telling people that they could not buy that. It was not for sale. Whatever they thought they would offer us for it would not be enough. They're welcome to take a photo with it and move along.
Is it still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm totally going to go to Earth 2 Comics and get my picture with this, people. So
you got it. It's awesome. It's also just a great shop, and mm-hmm. they really are great at supporting us and our comics and stuff like that. And then I have seen the Booster Gold episode of Smallville because I love Booster Gold.
Appropriately titled Booster, season 10.
I just learned that before we started recording this.
And you get two heroes, so the price is one. You get Booster Gold and the Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle.
That's true. I actually think both of those actors would still be great choices for the Arrowverse. I think mm-hmm. We didn't see a lot of Jaime in that episode, but Booster's like really awesome. He's played by I believe, a soap opera star, which is just picture perfect. And he's got that racing jacket with all the sponsorship. It's so good.
That is that's a Jeff Johns written episode, and that's one of my favorite episodes and one of the most comic accurate ones.
Of course it is.
And near the end of the show, Clark Kent is actually becoming the Clark Kent that we know from the comics. He's wearing the glasses, the trench coat. He's trying.
And the black jacket when he's Superman?
Well, the blue.
Or
it's the, blue,
or the,
it's
red,
the
and, red and blue blur?
Yeah, he wears many jackets. My favorite Smallville fake Superman look is the season 9 with the trench coat and like the Neo look with the chalk ass on his chest. But in season 10, he is wearing the red zip up shirt. But all that aside, he is really starting to be the kind of bumbling Clark Kent, which near the end of season 10, it's like it's about time he got there. But anyway.
Yeah. So then the only other episode I've seen the JSA one. I can't remember. But the only other one I've seen is the episode that we're going to talk about today. And it's the kind of show that I think is sort of like how I would describe Buffy. I think it is very a product of its time, and I don't know how accessible it would be for someone starting brand new. You would obviously have a stronger POV on that than I do, but I am at some point in the future going to do like the greatest hits, because I know I have a list of like the 25 best Smallville episodes.
Who compiled this list?
Jason compiled this list.
Okay, yeah, share that list with me. I'd be curious to see
I will.
what I think, but anyway.
It feels like a weird mm-hmm. gap in my knowledge, particularly with how much work I do sort of in and around the Arrowverse. So this was a really welcome treat and a mm-hmm. really good episode, actually. So I'm glad that
good.
I'm glad that I wasn't thrown in the deep end and just like, what is going on?
We'll get into it. But I think it's funny that they have a previously on before
yes,
the episode
thank
starts.
God.
And it's a very long previously on. It's like a minute and a half. And I'm like, this is like four season, like condensed into a minute and a half. So I think that was very helpful for someone who was kind of coming in cold.
It was absolutely perfect. And then I did spend a lot of time because on our Geek History lesson on Lana Lang, Jason told me about how she turned into a witch, which I love witches. They're my favorite. They're my favorite fictional monster, but he also said it wasn't a good storyline. But I know that kind of has to do with the crystals, so that was exciting for me.
That everybody remembers, like season 4, that's when Lana turns into a witch, right? I'm like, yes, that's the one. So, and,
yeah.
you know, speaking of season 4, you know, but when I started this podcast, people were like, what's your least favorite season? I'm like, all right, it's either between season 4 and season 7. And I must mm-hmm. say, having rewatched season 4 now, because this is the final episode of season 4, I did season 4 a disservice. I actually enjoyed it a lot more. There are a lot of hiccups, okay? Seasons 1 through 3 are still much better than season 4. But, I mean, I haven't got to season 7 yet, from what I recall. Season 7 is much worse. So we shall see. I love all Smallville, but you gotta rank them, and one of them has to be last. And right now, season 4 has edged in that 9th spot.
You can also love something and understand that it's not perfect. You know?
Yeah, I'm just trying to be a nice, well-balanced fan here.
Yeah.
You know, Ashley, you mentioned something just in passing earlier, and that kind of had a light bulb question for me, for you.
Sure.
Arthurian studies, right? What is your favorite King Arthur movie?
I don't like any of them.
Okay, fair enough.
I would give the Merlin, the live-action miniseries from the 80s, I give that a lot of points for hitting a lot of the most important narrative beats. But in my opinion, there's been no good Arthur story and the Arthur movie adaptation, and there's been no good Robin Hood adaptation. I actually think A Sword in the Stone and the Disney Robin Hood Are fair shakes at the stick, but obviously because they are very all ages friendly, they miss a lot of the larger swaths that mm-hmm. go on. I think, you know, even though the writer was proven to be very problematic, I think the best contemporary pastiche is probably Mists of Avalon. And I know there is a miniseries, haven't seen it, but I don't know if stories that are that big and that are so baked into our culture and our shared history, I don't know if they should or can be translated. I think the same thing about the Iliad and the Odyssey, because when I saw Troy as a preteen, I thought it was dope. It's not. It's really bad. And I kind of thought the same thing about the King Arthur movie. And then you get a little older and you're like, it's not dope. It's bad.
No, I love that you mentioned Merlin, because that is that's arguably my favorite. The NBC miniseries of Merlin was Sam Neill. Like, I really enjoy that one.
Yeah.
Also, I recently rewatched Excalibur and I'm like, okay. It's very of its time, the way it presents the story, because
Excalibur is not bad.
It's it's like these vignettes, really. But that's how La Morte d'Arthur was written, and so it's like, well, I mean, they translated the material pretty well. So, like, if I was going to tell someone, like, okay, there, you go watch one thing about King Arthur, it'd probably be Excalibur, because I feel like that's close enough. And it's a pretty well done movie with the production value, and it doesn't feel like I think about, like, the ones to avoid, like the Clive Owen one. It's like, what are you doing? That is so inaccurate. But anyway.
It's also kind of funny because, just to go down one more King Arthur tangent, there is so much of, like, pre-Renaissance French poetry that is based on Arthurian legend, like Le Mot d'Arthur and Marie de France's round, her poems, that are some of my favorite Arthurian stories, and they obviously don't translate to English as well as possible. So it's kind of funny that instead of going back to, like, the History Britannica, we do pull a lot more from the French tradition. Anyway, coming soon to this feed is our Arthurian Legends podcast.
Always hold on to Arthur, yes. So so before we jump into it, I do have a couple quotes from Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 4 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold about this episode. And creator Al Goff had this to say: in many of these shows, they graduate their characters after 2 or even 3 years, and we decided to do it after 4 years. For us, at that point in the series, it was time to move on, too. It was great to be able to have that senior year play out in those sort of stories, then end with a huge high school graduation you'll never forget, and then be able to move them into young adulthood, which I think has been fantastic. And then, you know, director Greg Beeman had this to say: I think it was good for all of us. I think we're all really looking forward to getting out of high school and exploring more mature relationships. One of the things I really liked about Smallville overall was that we progressed through high school in a good way. The series serviced how the characters had matured in the 4 years of high school, especially Clark, who starts to deal with more responsibility and mature issues in season 4. So there you have it. The episode is called Commencement. So that's, I had to look that up. You know, that's high school graduation. That's why they always call it when you graduate high school, commencement. So I was, you know, also
a nice French word, commencement, to begin. Yeah.
There we go. See, the Arthurian King Arthur studies coming out right there. Even the way you said La Morte d'Arthur, I was like, wow, she knows what she's talking about.
My mom's family's French.
There it is. But yes, I guess as you all are sick of me saying, when I was watching Smallville, I was Clark Kent's age. So I graduated high school the same time he did and all this stuff. So my high school graduation was not near as eventful as this. But let's get into it. Commencement.
You're my father. Talk to me. Tell me what you've done.
It was you who brought this upon yourself, Kal-El.
What did I do?
I sent you here to unite the three elements.
The stones? They have nothing to do with me!
But they do, Kal-El. For the knowledge of the universe is meant for you only. Yet you chose to deny your heritage. Today, you will witness the consequences.
Then you send a meteor shower!
I have done nothing, Kal-El. Human blood has stained one of the elements and awakened a great danger from the darkness of space.
What can I do to stop it?
There is nothing you can do to prevent what is already in motion. But the meteor shower is just beginning, Kal-El. I warned you that the elements could not fall into the hands of a human. The three must become one. It is the only way to save Earth from total annihilation.
I don't know where they are! out of time to find them!
If you don't unite them at once, you, my son, will be seared by a fire from the sky. Even you can't survive. The future of mankind rests in your hands, Connor.
Please! Help me! I can't do this alone!
Commencement is the 22nd episode of Smallville's fourth season. It aired on May 18th, 2005. It was written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer, and directed by Greg Beeman. Now, one note about who wrote the episode. This is the first time a season premiere or season finale was not written by creators Al Goff and Miles Millar. They turned over to Slavkin and Swimmer, and they go on to become executive producers on the show down the road. So it's cool they're kind of handing over the reins right there. So before we jump into it here, Ashley, I mentioned that the previously on, and so that was very helpful to you to kind of get you up to speed on what happened, right?
Surely was.
Yeah, because there's a lot in this season, and that's interesting that I don't, obviously I know Smallville kind of in and out, so I don't think about like how helpful would this be to someone. So I'm glad they put that on there because it's different nowadays, like with the Arrowverse, like they kind of include it in the episode, which is interesting. Like every single episode has that, right? But Smallville, not everyone does. So I'm glad they made the choice, at least especially for the season finale, to do that.
And also, then when people are binging it and they don't know what's happening, it's very, very helpful.
Yes, yes. Opening confrontation here between Lana and Genevieve Teague, played by the great Jane Seymour. Were you surprised to see her pop up in Smallville?
I was. I didn't know that Smallville had that many epic guest stars. I know a lot of people have come out of Smallville. I know that's how, what's that boy from Supernatural's name? There you go. Jason Todd. I know that he got Supernatural because of that run that he did on Smallville. Like, I know a lot of people have come out of that show, but I didn't realize that Genevieve T and then the Kents were, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, look at all these great actors.
That's right. We got Bo Duke. We got Lana Lang from Superman 3.
She is so gorgeous. I love her.
I think Jane Seymour is probably the biggest name who was not connected to Superman in some way, mm-hmm. to come on the show. I mean, you have Rucker Howard, but he was always more of a character actor. But Jane Seymour, I mean, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, right?
Yeah, totally. So problematic this show by contemporary standards.
Yes. Yes. So this scene between Lana and Miss Teague here, where she shows up, wants the Stone of Power. Lana won't give it to her. She pulls a gun on her. They fight. Lana stabs her with the Stone of Power. Like, that's a heck of a murder weapon, I'd say. And by the way, we have a plus one for Lana kills. We finally have another one, guys. I know you guys have been waiting for it. It's on the tally board. But this scene was actually written for the last episode, Forever, but they kind of moved it into the beginning of this
interesting.
Episode.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they were running long and they were like, just put it there. That's fine.
Well, this is another thing, and I wanted to tie this together when I mentioned this. This episode, when it aired back in 2005, it aired in a special 90-minute time slot. And they had a 10-minute preview of Batman Begins during the commercials at the time. So it was a big promotional push. Yeah, so that's I don't know if that dates this episode for y'all, but Batman Begins was coming out that summer. So,
oh, I feel old.
But this is episode, it does run 10 minutes longer than all other small episodes. All other small episodes that aren't two-parters and stuff, they go about 42 minutes. This one's about 52 minutes. So there you go. So do the math on that, folks. 10 more minutes on a show, 30 more minutes in a broadcast slot. And that's the only time they did this. And I was actually, I kind of got spoiled. I was like, they should do this with all the finales, but I understand the tie-ins and all that good stuff. But anyway, Lana kills Mrs. Teague, and then who is there but Lex Luthor, right?
Heck yeah. I mean, where else would he be?
Yeah. That's like either best timing ever or worst time ever. Now, Ashley, you said you had heard things about Erica Durance's Lois Lane. Surely you've heard things, yes, about Michael Rosenbaum's Lex Luthor as well.
I have. He is lauded, I would say, as the best live-action Lex Luthor. I also remember when this was airing, and this may have been maybe my first inkling that the show existed, I read in a gossip magazine, because as a teenager, I worked at a grocery store, so we read all the magazines when we were not working. Michael Rosenbaum encountered Kevin Spacey, also canceled and problematic by contemporary standards, on the red carpet, probably of Superman Returns. And Kevin Spacey said something to him like, I'm the real Lex Luthor. And Michael Rosenbaum said something back like, that's fine, I'm the younger, hotter version.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very funny at the time. And as an adult, I'm like, that's kind of rude, man. But I mean, you're right. He's great in this episode, and it's my understanding that this is the beginning of his real villainous turn, And you can kind of see how he seems like he means well, but he's always thinking and he's always driving toward whatever his goal is.
I think really this is one of the best examples of that, like him really sliding into that villainy, because like he, like if you look at on the surface level, everything he does in this episode, right, up until when he snaps kind of at the end, it completely makes sense. He's like, hey, that's a murder weapon. Give me that. Let me clean this up for you. Like, totally makes sense. But you know, he really, his real intentions are to get his hands on these stones of power and use them for himself. But he does a great job up to the very end until he snaps. And then he really gets to see that villainous Lex Luthor, which we'll get to at the end. But this stabbing Mystique here, Lana gets like possessed again. So we have a Isabel the Witch takes her over again just for that. And then I guess, like, oh, I guess mission accomplished. And then she goes away. And then finally, Lana loses her infamous back tattoo, which she's had the whole season. And it's been a big mystery. And now it's gone. And now we know that Lana Lang can go to the beach and stuff and not have this weird tattoo on her back. So then we cut to Clark, and he's sleeping on the couch because Lois Lane has moved in and living in his room. That's why Clark's on
the couch. Oh, yeah, that was something I didn't understand. I was like, why is she in his house? And well, yes. First, when she came down for breakfast, I was like, not breakfast. It was like 2 in the morning.
Yeah,
I was like, Lois just lives in his house in high school? And Jason's like, well, yeah, but no.
Yeah, it's complicated.
And they also hate each other, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it's they did the whole, like, they don't like each other now, but they're going to be in love in the future thing. They play that, CW, pretty well, right? But it's a little, they play it a little heavy sometimes, you know, but, you know, they walk a fine line with that. So it's pretty obvious, like, I think even the first time I saw this, like, okay, this is not going to be real, you know, I don't know, because, have you ever seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Yes.
Okay, that is what this scene reminded me of. You got, like, clocks going off, radios, bright light outside, and then the dog's going crazy. And then when he opens the door, it's like, slam dunk. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, because the whole just light's flashing in. He goes outside, he sees, like, just, you know, light, the Aurora Borealis, basically, forming itself outside. They turn red, blue, and yellow, because, hey, it's a Superman show, we love primary colors. Big energy pulse, and then he wakes up from his nightmare that he was having. And his parents are like, oh, calm down, it's just a nightmare. But he thinks something's up, so this clues him into bigger things are afoot here.
Yeah. Also, I love this dog. This dog is not a canon dog. This dog has been canonized since, I believe. Shelby, what a great dog.
Shelby, the Golden Retriever, premiered in the episode Crypto. Clark tried to name him Crypto, but Lois was like, that's a stupid name. So they named him Shelby instead.
Lois is not wrong, but it's also a great name.
Yeah. He said, I believe his line was, you know, Crypto, because, you know, he's cryptic. It's like, what? But anyway.
That is such a like pre-Arrowverse explanation. Instead of just Crypto, like Krypton, duh.
Yeah. But he had to have a reason to call that. But anyway, they didn't call him that. They called him Shelby. He's here to stay for a long while.
He's so cute.
Now, his parents tell him when he woke up, he was saying, it's coming. And this reminded me, of course, season 2, the finale in Exodus. The day is coming. That was a big deal in those two episodes. And I still repeat that to people. The day is coming. That's like a Smallville catchphrase that had Smallville come out today, I guarantee you, it would have been a hashtag trending on Twitter and all that good stuff. But it was before its time. So we see these meteors flying past and they break apart. And this is kind of my major issue with this episode. Like, you're telling me, like, I believe, like, it makes perfect sense there was a meteor shower with Smallville and the spaceship. Like, it covered the ship up, all that good stuff. But there was another one just sitting out there waiting.
Yes.
And Jor-El explains later, because human blood has touched the stones, like, that's what released this meteor shower. Like, that's way contrived.
Classic sci-fi trope there.
it doesn't work that way, but whatever, you know.
But doesn't it, though? Doesn't it? Terrence Stamp said it did.
Yeah, I mean, I believe Terrence Stamp. So, hey, but wherever he says goes, right?
Totally.
But it's a pretty lame plot device. And then, not only that, we have the other most ridiculous thing in this episode, this counter we keep cutting to. And the episode, I'm like, someone was watching too much 24, I think. What did you think of this countdown?
Oh, my God. It was awful. I'm not super familiar with 24, but absolutely, that feels exactly like a product of the time. And I was like, does this happen in every episode? It does not. I learned.
No.
I mean, 24 was huge, so I get it. But I don't think it added to the episode, you know. And all superheroics run on a running clock, I guess.
You're right. you don't need
clock
to
that's
see
running
it.
Down. Yeah, and visualizing it, that was one of the aspects to me, that and then the size of the graduation crowd were the two things that felt the most silly in the episode.
Yes. Maybe they needed to fill out this extra time slot, and they're like, all right, we'll take this scene from this other episode, put it in, we'll add a timer.
A long episode, which is so interesting. I don't know.
It's, and I wonder, and I always say, like, I'm going to re-edit Smallville one day, and maybe I'd re-edit this episode. I think the tension is still there without the ticking clock, be literally in your face. But anyway, we have a lot of washing up in the mansion. Lex's brother there to take you away from the scene of the crime. He does say that Genevieve Teague was a very powerful woman married to a very powerful lawyer, Edward Teague, who, again, I'm a little foggy on season seven. But he is ultimately played by Robert Ricardo, everyone's favorite holographic doctor from Star Trek Voyager.
Him.
So Robert Ricardo got to marry Jane Seymour. Good on you, man. But
truly,
they don't really establish if he was dead at this point. There's so much retconning in season seven. That's why I also have a problem with it. This stuff, these stones, these people, not mentioned again for like three seasons, and that's why I'm kind of foggy on it. But they imply that he was dead already. But they say he's not. I don't know. I'm just making note of that here. Put a pin in it, guys. We'll get to it in three seasons.
Sounds like an Arrowverse show.
Yes.
Sounds like a Berlanti production.
So Lex also mentions he's going to bring in one of the best lawyers from New York to help Lana.
Which he keeps on retainer. Like, what is Lex up to? I mean, I know he's filthy, stinking rich. Like, that is very canon. But, like, what is he doing at all times that he needs this lawyer at his beck and call?
Well, I was just more shocked that they weren't from Metropolis, because we have
fair.
It's a big trope on this show, and Hulu, and God bless Hulu for doing this. There's a real Smallville fan working for Hulu, because when Hulu first started airing Smallville, they had a little promo. And they said, like, when Lex Luthor has a problem, he knows who to call. And it's this montage of him saying, I got a lawyer coming in from Metropolis. I have a doctor flying in from Metropolis. Oh, we're going to have our specialist in Metropolis. It was so good. And I'm shocked. I was waiting for him to say, I have a lawyer in Metropolis, but they said New York. Maybe they even realized that we're pushing it too far with the Metropolis specialist. But anyway.
Is this at the time where Smallville and Metropolis are, like, 6 hours apart? Or is this when Metropolis is, like, down the road? Because I've also heard that there's sort of a roving timeline on how far away the city is.
Yes, it's a sliding scale of geography. They
very
establish...
Marvel Comics move.
Yes, exactly. It's the condensed timeline of Marvel Comics, the condensed geography of DC, the world here. Because when the show first started, it was kind of far away. They didn't really say. And then season three, they established it was 3 hours away, which is a 6 hour round trip. Okay. And then as the show continues and all the characters live in Smallville but work in Metropolis, Lionel himself says in season seven, he's like, oh, it's a small town just outside the city. I was like, that is such a retcon. But yes, it's far away. So, but Lex tells Lana to stay there. So that's kind of her plot. Like, I got to stay low. And I would listen to Lex's point. If I just killed someone, okay, I'm going to listen to Lex Luthor to what he has to say and hide out at his mansion. It seems to be the safest place to be.
Isn't that also Queen Mansion and the X-Mansion?
Yes, it is the Everything Mansion.
That's what I thought. That one castle outside of Vancouver?
Yes, outside of Vancouver. I've been to Vancouver Island, but I've never been to Vancouver proper.
Oh, lovely.
Next time, I love Vancouver Island, by the way. I was like, I want to like live here one day, right? But I definitely want to go to Vancouver and do the whole Smallville pilgrimage one day, and I'm going to see that mansion. But yes, you'll see it in all the X-Men movies and all of Arrow, until he loses the mansion, of course. Spoilers.
Yes. Yeah, spoilers for something that happened 4 years ago.
I honestly, when Arrow first started, I was kind of annoyed at it. Like, it had to win me over, because I was like, you should have done a show with Justin Hartley as the Green Arrow. How do you dare you? You're reusing our sets and our actors. But it won me over quickly, and I'm a big Arrow fan. So that I just, just to say, for the record.
Look at you. You can grow and change and admit it on the internet. Can
right?
you imagine?
Is there such a thing in fandom? Apparently so. So, So Clark is talking to his parents, and he thinks that was a warning, that I don't know why he thinks this. He hasn't really had prophetic dreams before. This is not, it's not one of his powers, okay? But Lois comes downstairs, and again, this is this episode is a little too much. Hey, guys, remember Lois Lane? She and Superman are going to be together in the future, because she's like, I had a dream about a guy in a red cape. I'm like, did we need that? No. But she lets us know that she's moving out. She's going to ship out with her dad and go try to find her sister, who's up to no good. And yes. I feel like this was a way of saying, like, okay, if, you know, I don't, we're not, because Erica Durance was just a special guest star at this point. She wasn't in the main credits.
Which is, like, crazy to think about, because, again, for me, the legacy of Smallville is so tied up in being the best live-action Lois Lane. Mm. It's the only Lois Lane Funko Pop that they've made is in the Smallville line.
That's true. That's very true.
So there you go.
I will say that I know that at the movie department at the time was very, like, protective of this stuff, and they still are. They're so weird about it.
I just wish.
So they were like, all right, you can use Lois for 2 episodes. And they're like, okay, you can, it's for season 4. And they're like, you can use Lois for 4 episodes. And they're like, okay. And like, all right, you can use her for 13 episodes. They're like, okay, great. You can have the rest of the season. Yeah. But
now
then they didn't know.
Supergirl's mom.
Yeah, yes, exactly, right? But they didn't know, and I think this was kind of an out, like, just in case, because, hey, Superman Returns is in production at this time, and they're like, all right, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to say we're going to have to cancel the show. We don't know, you know. So this was kind of their backdoor out, like, in case Lois couldn't come back, she would just be off for a while. And I thought that was pretty smart of them to at least set up the fact that she was leaving. Spoilers, she doesn't. She's finally in the main credits for the next five years of the show. So
yeah.
It's so interesting to me that you think, equate Lois to Smallville.
I do, because it's one of the consistent things that I heard. It's also, here's a funny divergent. When I first was talking to the first person I knew who ever watched Smallville regularly was one of my first roommates when I moved out to LA. And I was like, oh, is Lois Lane, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, yeah, but Lana Lang is a way bigger part of the show. And I was like, I hadn't read any Superman at the time, and I was like, Lana Lang, that's such a dumb, stupid, made-up name that they wanted to do instead of Lois Lane. Now coming to learn what an incredible character she is and how important she is to Clark's character and mythos, but I thought that was the thing that they'd made up for the show.
That's great. No, that would be like, it's like Smallville, the animated series. We can't do Lois, but let's do Lana Lang. That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, I almost had it right because they made up Chloe.
They did, because Chloe was kind of a mix between Lois and Lana.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was real big on the, Chloe's going to become Lois Lane. I'm very excited. That was a big fan theory back in the day.
She's also one of the ones that I know people really want to see brought into the comics in, like, a big, bad way.
Yeah, she, before the New 52, they actually hadn't introduced her a little bit, like, as, like, a friend of Jimmy Olsen and all that kind of on the side. But they haven't really introduced her. Now, as we know, things are kind of awkward with Chloe.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
so it's,
you know,
like,
you could still do it because I think she's a really cool character.
Yeah, you have to separate those things. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But my point being, like, you equate Lois Lane and Smallville. Like, to me, she's like this new character who showed up 4 years in. I'm like, who is this? Chloe's
so
our
funny.
Lois Lane. You know, so because, you know, you're watching the show, we have the same core cast, and she comes in. And you're like, well, okay, she's a late. To me, she's always a late comer to the show. But she's in, you know, to do some math here, 7 out of the 10 seasons. So it's hard to say that, you know, that there really is no separation anymore between her and the rest of the cast when you look at it that way.
Oh, man, what is math?
So next scene, we have Lex goes to the town to clean up, returns to the scene of the crime. It's all gone, you know? Body's gone, blood's gone. And it's great because Lionel's sitting there in the shadows. And he says, Lana Lang made quite a mess, and he cleaned it up. And I love his line here. He says, you know, for a woman without a heart, Genevieve Teague sure had a lot of blood.
Great line. John Glover, what a treat.
He is, these scenes, and I say it every time they have a scene together, best scenes on the show. These are the best two actors on the show, the best two characters on the show. I love all the Luther interactions. And this is basically them playing each other, because Lionel knows that Lana had a stone, he wants it, and he's going to blackmail Lex to get that stone from him, because, I mean, yeah, he cleaned up this mess, but only to hold it over Lex's head, because if he doesn't get the stone, he's going to tell the sheriff where to find Genevieve's body, and Lana's blood's all over it. So Lionel has this set up pretty good. And then I also love how he kind of gives Lex his insight. Like, don't, you know, you always need to be the gallant hero saving the damsel. And that's good analysis of Lex at this point in time.
Yeah.
Even though they have an adversary relationship, like, they do understand each other, and this sets up another, it's just another, you know, ticking clock. Not the literal ticking clock, but a ticking clock nonetheless.
But a narrative ticking clock?
There it is. The ones you don't need to just put on the screen. And I will say, you know, this really does start to feel like an epic finale. You know, I feel like there's a lot of epic stuff going on here. You know, it feels like, you know, you're paying off things from the season, you're setting up things, and, you know, some other season finales, give or take. Like, to me, so far in the show, This is the second time this has happened. This first season finale, Tempest, was kind of epic with this, like, the storm is coming and all this.
Yes.
And now we have a meteor shower coming. So Superman versus natural disasters seem to always be very effective.
Well, he can arguably not win against a natural disaster. Also, Superman v. natural disaster is really funny to me because, like, what's he going to hit? But that scene with, and I might be skipping ahead a little bit, so I apologize if that's the case, where he protects the little boy.
Oh, one of the best saves in the show. So good.
And then becomes a huge part of all the marketing that ever comes out of this franchise ever since. Like, it was on posters and billboards and trailers and... trailers that it's now on Hulu in DC Universe. But it's interesting to me that, like, Superman v. Natural Disasters is, in my opinion, super silly. But I get it. Like, TV, we do it with The Flash all the time. He fights water and wind constantly. There's been three weather wizards for no reason.
Yes.
And they're all awful, especially the girl. But out of that, you know, very Golden Age level silliness, we do get this iconic Superman moment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned, side note, you mentioned how there's three weather wizards. That's a thing I talk about on this podcast. I complain about the era. It started in Smallville. There's like two of everything. Right? Even in Smallville, there's two Dr. Hamiltons. You know, there's two this, there's two that. You go to Arrow, there's two Green Arrows, there's two Dark Archers, there's three, four Black Canaries. It's like, there's two Reverse Flashes, but one of them is, it's like, really, guys, can we just, I know they do that in the comics too, but it feels kind of cheap to have the same kind of, they lets them have their cake and eat it too with doing the same things with these different characters who are the same character.
I think it also shows, if people want to look for it, you can really see how far they often have to stretch production per what they are allowed to do per their corporate overlords. It's like, Well, you can have Weather Wizard. Okay. We're going to get as much money out of Weather Wizard as we can. You know, where we're going to get as much out of the Dark Archer. Black Canary is a great example of that. And I'm like, just pick one. I don't even care if you pick the one I like. Just pick one.
Exactly. It's like, consistency, please. But anyway, you know, we get our ticking clock here after some stock footage of, like, the SETI satellites, like, rotating and finding that there's a meteor shower coming. We get our stock government people. Oh, my God. It's headed straight for Earth because the meteor shower is coming. Now, Clark is getting ready for his graduation in his loft because we never see Clark's room. Why would we? He's hanging out in his loft.
Look, I've been in a lot of barns. They don't look that cool, but it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's like this show makes me want to, like, live on a farm, but I feel like it would just be underwhelming compared to what we see here.
Yes.
So Lois comes in to help him tie his tie. It's kind of cute. Actually, kind of a callback to the season one finale, which I mentioned, Tempest. Lex is the one that comes in, kind of helps him with his bow tie when he goes to the spring formal. So it kind of shows how far we've come from season one. That's why I like the feeling of this finale, because when Lex comes by later, it's very adversarial. They're not friendly anymore. But here, Lois and him are kind of there's a little too much, like, hey, I'm going to be your wife in the future because I'm talking about Lana Lang and all this stuff. So to me, Smallville goes too far with this sometimes. What did you think of this interaction between Lois and Clark, Ashley?
It's a little on the nose, but they're both good enough and they have really good chemistry. So despite the fact that it is, I'll say, forced, but I do tie my husband's tie, so I liked that beat. That was very funny for me.
And of course she has to say, oh, journalism, kill me first. I'm like,
oh yeah, that was silly. I didn't mind the stuff about Clark and Lana. I thought that was,
yes, because that is what she would say to that, like, oh, you're gonna start your farm, you're gonna get a little Clark Jr., you're gonna marry Lana. He's like, me and Lana. She's like, yeah, it's in the stars. I'm like, yeah, it's like, yeah, that's what the show,
I mean,
show
on Earth too, it might be,
yeah, who knows. And they leave on good terms because, as you said, they kind of have they don't hate each other, but they have kind of an adversary relationship at this point. And that was kind of my issue with, honestly, like Lois earlier in the show. They play, because that was like a thing, like the you talk about the corporate overlords. They can't have Clark and Lois be together.
Yeah.
So they kind of played him more like brother and sister. And I'm like, that's cool. But when you see that for like 3 or 4 years and then they finally get in a romantic relationship, I'm like, okay. I mean, that happens with people. I'm just saying it's a weird gear shift when you're so used to it this way.
It's one of those weird things that a lot of the Berlanti shows that follow it also share, where Arrow bucks against it because that whole first season is about, like, oh, Oliver and Laurel are going to wind up together because Green Arrow, Black Canary. And then they listened to their fans and gave us Olicity, which I hate.
Yes, but, yes. Yes, me too. I'm right there with you.
But Flash does that too, where, like, Barry and Iris have no chemistry and then suddenly they get married. And I think even if it's not always to my taste, I think if you have the opportunity to do something that serves your show, you can do that because you don't have to be beholden to the comics. So it might have been interesting. And again, like, I like Erica Durance a lot and I love Lois Lane, but it might have been interesting if in whatever alternate universe they hadn't wound up forced together. Like, maybe they do grow up and become like BFFs and he's always got her back and they work together, but they never hook up because they have this brother-sister thing that you talked about.
That would have been a great Elseworlds. Now, and my choice would have been him and Chloe together.
Mm-hmm.
I
know that's a big ship.
That's my ship. So that, because I was on the Clark ship, C-H-L-A-R-K, they kind of put me over there. that Clois ship, the C-H-L-O-I-S, where Chloe would become Lois Lane, or even not, you know, just the fact that Clark and Chloe would end up together. That's what I say, though. I see what they did on Arrow with Oliver and Felicity.
Yeah.
And I'm makes me glad they didn't put Clark and Chloe together on Smallville because I might have hated it. So be careful what you wish for, fans.
I know. They might have had a horrible son. Who knows?
Oh, I guess so. So we get their Smallville commencement. Now, you mentioned the size of this graduation. What amused you about this graduation crowd here?
The jib shot that they have, which is sort of the crane shot, I guess, if people aren't familiar with TV terms. Yeah. I can't say that and not sound like a dick. But you know, that big overhead now would be a drone where we see the whole commencement. And like, look, I've been to teeny tiny towns of Kansas where the population is 75. So for this to be the size of the high school that is servicing probably a number of little communities, it's not even the size of the crowd that bothers me from that logical standpoint. But from a television standpoint, you look at it and you're like, that's how many extras you could afford?
Look, they're on a budget. They got a meteor shower to do.
Ashley, I get it. There's a lot. Like, this is a big finale. But when I first saw it, it really made me laugh. And it's not, again, it's not even that it's wrong, but there was something about it that I thought was so silly. That and then the fact that so they're like pumping through these grads, like they're calling all these names, not in alphabetical order, which made me so mad. Mm. And they get to Clark Kent. And there's a good, like, 18-second pause so that we can have that slow camera move around the front of Clark and he can wave to all his fans in the crowd. And I was like, isn't it interesting that we're just pausing right here while the star of the show? I also, Tom Bowling was something like 24 or 25 when he first got the part. Like, he is the oldest looking high school graduate. Yeah, this side of Ian Somerhalder on The Vampire Diaries.
Ian Somerhalder, former Smallville guest star, by the way, from season 3.
Yeah, he was supposed to be Batman, wasn't he?
That was one of the rumors / theory / maybe WB was going to let him, and then they changed their mind / we'll never know. But yes.
He had a dumb name, right? He wasn't Bruce Wayne. He was like Adam Knight or something.
You know, because Adam West in The Dark Knight, and he wore a 27 t-shirt in one of the episodes. He was good at computers and kung fu.
Oh, that's cute.
Like, seriously, he was on like 6 or 7 episodes for the first 3 or 4. Totally could have been Bruce Wayne.
Look, I'll say this. He truly can't have been as bad as that kid we got in Gotham. So I like Ian Somerhalder a lot. I have no problem with Boone from Lost.
I don't like Gotham at all.
I do not.
Okay, so people call me hypocrite, all right? But I'm like, here's the deal with Smallville. Because as you mentioned when we were talking earlier, like, how can you do a Superman show and it's not Superman? Superman has the powers when he's born, all right? And you can kind of...
Absolutely.
That is what it is. You know, Batman becomes Batman because of his training and all that. And to have... Like, Gotham is a very schizophrenic show. I watched the first half of the first season. I'm not a fan of Gotham at all, so...
Yeah, which is nothing, not taking away from any listeners who love Gotham.
Yes.
Just means there's more Gotham for you and less for us, and we're all happy for
it. That's right. Speaking of the graduation, though, some of the names they call out Caroline Dries, Holly Harrell. These are writers on the show, so I thought that was a little cool Easter egg.
Oh, that's cute.
Little shout out. You know, it would have been nice to hear names of other Smallville high school students that we have maybe seen over the years. Of course, most of them have been killed off or sent off to Belle Reve. So, being meteor freaks. That's part of your small graduation class there. All the kids that are no longer with us due to the meteor.
Meteor freak of the week, man.
Yes, that's right. That's what they do. Now, we have a +1 for episode title set in episode because we see commencement on the banner there. And so I'm going to count that because when someone doesn't say it, if we see it in text, I count it. So there it is, +1.
I'll give
that.
You that. Also, not an unreasonable thing to have seen or spoken during this episode, the way that sometimes, and it's not even just Smallville, many shows just kind of shoehorn in what the theme of the episode is or the title.
Well, in commencement, right, we talked about, like, it has a... It has a kind of a universal definition about like moving from one stage to another. So, I mean, that it works for the event happening in the show. It works for the show itself. It works for what the character's going through. It's a good title for this episode.
Absolutely.
And then finally, I must say that I did, again, like I always say, I graduated at the same time as this, and my graduation was inside in our local basketball arena. I must say, watching television and movies, I always assumed my graduation was going to be outside in a big field, but I was disappointed, so.
Man, I didn't, our commencement, we had a graduation in June, and then our commencement, you were supposed to go back the November after you graduated to walk across the stage, and I did not go.
You know, I was hoping that they would get the principal back from Redux. I call him Special Principal 2 because he starred in Special Unit 2, and I forget actor's name now, but that's what I call him. He was the second principal because Principal Kwan died in season 1, but all that to say, come on, guys, throw us a bone. Get us a. It would have been nice to see some of these familiar faces. I have the same problem for the series finale. I'm like, who is at Lois and Clark's wedding? I've never seen these people before. But anyway.
That's like a real wedding, though.
Yeah. So Clark gets to graduate. Lana's not there, right? Because she's hiding out at Lex's. And that's like, mm-hmm. Where's Lana? Where's she going? She's going to miss her graduation.
Also a very long pause after they call Lana's name. And then they call the name multiple times, which is not a thing that happens.
Lana Lang. Nope, she's not here. And then poor Chloe. You know, I always say this show dumps on Chloe. And she doesn't even get to walk at her graduation. The military shows up and shuts down right after Clark Kent goes across the stage. So the army shows up and tells them there's a meteor shower coming and everybody has to evacuate. And I like kind of the Kent's reaction, like, oh my God, again? Because this happened like, you know, 13 years ago. So
I also love that in this universe, a meteor shower is dangerous because most of the time a meteor shower is an excuse to go outside at night and look at stars.
You know, that is an excellent point. I literally did not think about it. It's like... Because whenever there's a, like, hey, guys, camp out, you know, get your telescope out, be nice.
Yeah.
Between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m., you know, go to a cloudless area and see it. So that's, yeah, that is funny. But, and can they really calculate that it's coming to Smallville? I don't know.
I'm sure someone can at JPL. I just don't know how much that stuff is shared with the general populace.
Well, I like Chloe and Clark here because at this point, Chloe knows Clark's secret. Clark doesn't know she knows. So she's
She gives a great performance during this whole sequence.
Just the way she's like processing everything. She's really excited as a journalist. She really knows that Clark can like do something to help people and tries to egg him on. And he's like, why are you talking to me this way? Like he really is. But that's so Superman. He's kind of slow on the uptake. So he doesn't understand the hints she's dropping to him. So
everything's a bit of a slow burn with Superman, isn't it?
It is. It is. Because Batman, you know, he's a tactician. And Superman, you know, if Superman had the brain of Batman, he really would be unstoppable. But fortunately, he doesn't. So.
But he's so like honest and true and pure. Like Superman, it takes him a minute to realize that someone is lying to him because it would never occur to him to lie unless under extenuating circumstances. He's like Samwise Gamgee. Like when he falls down the stairs in Return of the King and finds the lembas bread that Gollum has thrown over and you watch him like crush it in his hand for a full minute as he realizes what's going on. Superman's kind of like that.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good call. But see, Lois doesn't know Clark's secret. So she's trying to talk to Clark. Okay, what you got to do is she keeps just talking to him. And Clark's trying to leave. And Chloe can see that he's trying to leave. And she tries to distract him. Also, Lois is getting all hysterical. And he's like, Lois, you're panicking. So that was a nice.
I love that.
Yeah. But he runs off and the kids are packing to leave. But Clark knows what he needs to do. He needs to go visit Jor-El. And see what is going on. And then we get another counter. So in case you guys weren't paying attention, I was curious to actually time out the episode if it really timed that way. I decided not to because that's just a waste
of
time.
I'm going to bet it doesn't because I know 24 episodes don't.
Yes, exactly. So he puts on his red jacket, blue shirt. So we have a plus one. For that, because it's his pseudo
Superman adjacent garb.
Yes, he wears this starting like season 4. They really start to turn it up, and then I swear seasons 5 through 7 and even 8 some, he wears this almost every other episode. That counter is gonna get really high. But he goes to the loft and he goes to pull out the key, the octagonal disc, the key to everything on Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great moment because Lex is there. And Clark has to kind of turn around, and he has the disc in his hand, like away from Lex, and it's a great shot where you kind of see it in the foreground, and Lex is in the background, and Lex has been looking for this disc on and off for several seasons, from when he lost it, and at the season 1 finale, see, it all ties back to that.
Truly.
But this is great how he has to, like, you know, maneuver around him, and Lex, again, he's being very altruistic. He wants his parents to get out on the Luthacorp jet, and like... Any logical person would take Lex up on this offer, but Clark has more important things to do and he can't get caught, right?
Yeah, like convince Lana to marry him, right? Yeah. That happens next season.
yes, that's about to happen.
I know about that.
And again, it shows you how far the show has come in the last, you know, 4 years, because at the end of season one, Clark and Lex are in the loft. There's a disaster coming. He's like helping him tie his bow tie. They're like, you know, being all friends and all that. And here it's very antagonistic. Like, you know, Clark's like trying to just get rid of him. But again, Clark has a good example too. He's like, hey, my dad wants to bring all of our stuff. So, okay. So, but it's a very kind of frigid departure when you know the next time they meet, it's not going to be the same.
But it's going to be in a weird, like weirdly the way it should be.
Yeah, it's very true.
You
very
know,
true.
Which is very strange.
Another kind of bit of trivia that Lex drops here on Clark is he says, my scientist discovered a secret chamber in the cave. Would you know anything about that? Because he keeps wanting.
In your research. And I'm like, you are children. Why are you doing? I'm sorry to any 18-year-olds who might be listening to this, but you're fully children. You'll understand it about 10 years. like, what research? What? I just punched my mic. I'm like so hysterical over that scene is so funny. And having been 18 once, I know the actors are much older, but it, mm-hmm. to me, it just smacks of like kids trying to play adults, even though it is a very Lex move.
Mm-hmm. No, it's him. And again, he wants to be friends with Clark, but he also wants to know his secrets and he wants him to tell him what's up.
Kiss. Yes,
that's another ship, you know, on the show.
But look, everyone ships everything. I'm sure there's double Luther shippers out there.
But unfortunately, you know, especially for Lex, Clark does not tell him what's up. He doesn't accept his offer to go on the plane. So they kind of part ways. But Clark goes back to the cave to see Jor-El. And this is the first time we've seen Jor-El in a while, voiced by the incomparable Terrence Stamp, General Zod himself.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, he tells Clark that he sent him there to unite the three elements. It's like, is that really why? There's so much retconning and like just making it up as they go along with this stuff. But that's, you know, humans have done it or touched it first. And now that's why the meteor shower has been unleashed, because he says human blood has stained one of the elements and unlocked a great danger from space. So we don't know what that is yet. We assume it's the meteor shower, but it sets up more things. See the spaceship that lands at the end of the episode, you know. But Clark is so whiny in the scene, I think. What did you think?
Yeah, he's a bit whiny. I'm not quite sure what a better way to have executed this scene is, which is weird to say. You know, like you sit there and you're like, this isn't great. What would be better than this? I'm like, well, I guess this is fine.
Well, he's like, I don't know where they are. I don't know what to do. Will you help me? I just found it amusing. But he, you know, Clark gets that way sometimes.
Perhaps maybe that's the way it needs to be, a little bit less of like yelling is an acting choice.
Yes.
You know, because like yelling and crying and punching people are sort of things you have to earn. And you're like, you could be a little less hysterical. For God's sake, you're Superman.
To be fair to Tom Welling, they are like shining a BFL in his face, and then also like blowing wind at him. I'm sure it's very loud in that room.
I love it. So I'm sure he cannot hear himself whatsoever. This effect is really funny. The CGI for the time is actually not too bad, mm-hmm. but this particular effect I found very funny.
Well, it's because they don't have the fortress yet.
Yeah, this is pseudo fortress, right? This is like baby fortress.
This is the baby fortress. Not to be confused with the Fortress of Solitude of his barn, which he also calls it. So that's a case of the show getting ahead of itself. He called the barn his Fortress of Solitude in the second episode. Because, of course, we're not going to get that far where we see the actual Fortress of Solitude. Of course not. Well, here we are, right? And some of this, I'm convinced, I haven't done like a shot-by-shot, but I'm convinced that they reused some of the footage here from Sacred a few episodes ago when Clark talks to Jor-El in a similar place. Because there's a lot of times you don't really see.
Interesting.
Yeah, you don't see his mouth, you know? And like they're kind of panning around him. Like, I bet they reused some of that stuff. So
I definitely can't speak to that, but I think that's fascinating from a production standpoint, because if they are doing, you know, all these big set pieces and the CG effects heavy sequence, that would make complete sense mm-hmm. if they're like, you're not going to see his mouth. Anyway, we already shot it. Just slap another filter on it. That's genius. Good call, my friend.
Exactly. But then he leaves the cave to go see his parents. And I really love this scene with the Kents. He says he has to stay and, you know, he's off to save the day one more time. That's his speech to the Kents. And they have an emotional moment. I love what Jonathan tells him. Like, this is like series finale level stuff you could do. Like, I always say this, Smallville, the season finales are always constructed in a way where, like, if you tweak a few things, it could be the series finale almost, you know, because Jonathan kind of pulls mm-hmm. him aside. He's like, all the years you've been running around on this farm were for this moment. I'm like, yeah, you know, you really get emotional and fired up, and I thought that was a great scene between the three of them.
Yeah, anything with the Kents is always good on paper, and it's so wonderful when it's good in practice as well. And truly, I said it earlier, the casting of Ma and Pa is Italian kiss perfection.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Lois, Lex, Ma and Pa, you know, these are iconic versions of these characters, you know? I mean, Tom Welling has played Clark Kent more than anyone else. I mean, I have a preference to him because I love Smallville, but Christopher Reeve is always my once and future Superman.
What a gorgeous Superman he makes, too.
Yeah, of course, right? But the supporting cast here is just excellent, and they are, you know, iconic versions of these characters, you know? So I'm like Gotham, am I right? Ayo, anyway, moving on.
Absolutely, you are.
Lana is waiting for Clark in the barn, and she gives Clark the stone that she had,
which is like not weird because it's not like they haven't seen each other at all for the entire episode.
she just shows up
and he's like, this is what high school girls do, right? This is normal, we're fine with this. Okay,
well, Clark kind of asks her like, hey, where'd you get this or something, but my first question is, whoa, there's blood on this. Now he does ask her eventually. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, you just gave me this. She's like, I do like how she turns around on him. She's like, hey, you know all those times that you asked me not to ask any questions and to trust you? I need you to do that for me here. And that was a nice reversal from what he has been doing to her for 4 years, I think.
A great bit of writing, but this Clark Kent needs to listen to My Favorite Murder, and he needs to have his hackles up. Like, you do not.
Take blood the murder weapon. Yeah.
Yeah,
like, you're an accessory to a crime, Clark.
Well, I guess he could break any handcuffs that he wants, so it'll be fine.
Well, just the reasoning here, like, it's so plot-driven, so contrived. She's like, I just know somehow that it's meant for you. I was like, that is, you know, insert the Deadpool meme here where he turns to the camera and says, well, that's just lazy writing. Because why else would she give it to Clark, right?
Well, at least they didn't have her. The absolute worst is when people say, like, particularly female characters, right? It was just, I have this woman's intuition. I'm like, don't do it. And they didn't, so it was okay.
Yeah. Well, so they have a moment here. She's like, I love you. He's like, oh, I love you too. And they kiss, and it's like, oh, wow, you know. That's something that they had broke up quite a long time. The whole season had been kind of building toward Clark and Lana getting back together. See, the thing about the early season 4, though, it was refreshing that was over, and it seemed like they weren't going to get together again. I know the show... Well,
every once in a while, there is very much a reminder of, like, this is a CW show. Right.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
This is that scene, you know. They're dropping the L word. He goes off to save the world. I guess she's going to go sneak back to the Luther Mansion because she snuck out.
Yeah. I guess their security is not all that.
No, the security of Luther Mansion is infamously bad. So, but hey, we get that profession of them. And then we get our counter again, in case you forgot, guys. Time is running out.
Tee, 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 tee.
Exactly.
Insert the 24 countdown noise here.
So instead of, you know, maybe on her journey back from the Kent farm to the Luther Mansion, calling Chloe, instead, Lana gets back to the Luther Mansion and calls Chloe, which Lex kind of sneaks up on her and hangs up the phone. I love old flip phones. That was a great move for him to just snatch the phone and hang it up from her, right?
Absolutely. But it's funny because any show that has even a flip phone in it, that's enough to make it still feel contemporary and modern, because we all know that one weirdo who still has a flip phone.
I miss flip phones because I, you know, when I had a Razor.
That was my first cell phone.
Yeah, Razor, yeah. So I got the gold top that they sell, and I used a black bottom.
Oh,
I was like,
fancy.
I was like, it's like a communicator, guys, because I don't know why. I'm going to have to invent it myself, I swear. An iPhone case that's like an original series communicator. It just slides in there, and you have the screen on the front. I don't know why. Oh, she's got a tricorder. Very good.
Yeah, on my desk. I'm sure no one could hear that. I truly only did it for us.
Well, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I'm saying there's an untapped market for cell phones there to look more like communicators. I love flip phones. But anyway, all that to say, Chloe does overhear Lex here. So that kind of gives her the hint that Lana is at Lex's mansion as well. But he tells her that, hey, I'm going to need that stone. I'm going to put it in my vault. And she's like, well, I don't want to give it to you. And he's like, well, Lana, I mean, it's a murder weapon, you know. I mean,
what else are you going to do with it? Yeah. Except give it to Superman.
Well, I mean, there's no reason, like, without what's going on here going on, there's no reason for her not to have given it to Lex. So
absolutely. He's so handsome, too. Trust handsome men. That's possibly the worst advice I have ever said out loud.
Oh, boy. You know, you mentioned good old Dean Winchester earlier. He shows up just when the Kents are leaving their farm. Now, I will say this. they loaded up a lot of stuff. I wouldn't necessarily have taken the grandfather clock or that giant like wagon wheel they have in the back of the truck, but hey, I'm...
Is that this? Wait, who has the stuffed cow in the back of their car? Maybe it's Lois and Chloe, but someone has a stuffed cow, like a stuffed animal.
I think it's like that big in that crowd scene. But the Kent Farm, spoilers, we see a meteor hit it at the end of the episode. And I think, how do they still have other stuff like in future seasons? But credit to them, they loaded that truck up pretty full. So plenty of stuff they saved.
Here's a weird sidebar. My apartment almost burned down a few weeks ago. It's amazing when you have enough notice what you could carry out with you.
Did you take your grandfather clock with you?
If I told you we had a single clock in this house, it would be a lie. If I had a grandfather clock and I could lift it, which I probably couldn't, I would take it because I would assume it would be old and of value.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by the way, complete side note, I saw your place almost burned down again. That's crazy. You guys are going to move?
Twice!
I mean, like...
Yeah, but we can't until our lease is up. If we and the cat survive that long...
Take the cat, maybe grab a couple comic books, but, you know, everything else is replaceable, right? So
here's another fun fact. The only comic book that we elected to save when we thought we might have to leave or we were on notice to evacuate was the Jason's copy of The Death of Superman signed by Lex Luthor.
Oh, there you go.
Lex Luthor. Dan Jurgens signed by Lex Luthor.
It's like Michael Rosenbaum signed this.
My favorite thing Michael Rosenbaum has ever done is ask people to bring him Tim Tams and then build a fort out of them.
He is quite a character. So there you go. There's your tips about evacuating your house, right?
There you go.
So Jason, he pulls up and it is funny. He's like, I'm having what you call a bad day. He looks like hell.
There's a lot of acting going on in this scene.
Yes, he's making many choices in this scene. But he shotguns them back into the house, and so that's going to be putting our characters in more danger. Because he had been mm-hmm. shot off a cliff and kind of come back, clawed his way back to the living here in the last episode. We see the counter again, because hey, drama, timer, it's running out. And Chloe and Lois are in Chloe's car evacuating, and they run into this military blockade, but Chloe wants to turn around and go get Lana because she's at Lex's place, or at least figure out what's going on with her. But they get stopped by the brigade, and then Lois jumps out and does her, do you know who I am? Do you know who my father is routine? This was cute, huh?
I actually, this scene really spoke to me because my father was in the military, and that's legit. Like, when your dad has power, you obviously can't go and scream at people the way she did, but it is really funny when you're a tiny person to watch adult people really change their how they feel about you.
Well, yeah, she's like, look at this, look at that. He's like, I know, ma'am, I'm sorry, but it's gonna last. We don't have a lot of people. Like, I felt kind of bad for the guy. So, but that creates the distraction we need for Chloe to sneak past the barrier and I guess run back to Luther Mansion. I guess she said it was like the next exit or something, wasn't that far, but she doesn't have super speed like some characters, so it might have taken her a while to get there. I need a counter on that. Where's the counter on that? I want to know how long it took her to get there.
The counter would have run too long.
Yes, exactly. So Clark goes into the secret chamber. He puts the second stone in place. The first stone, this is crazy. Think about this, guys. This whole season has been about three stones of power. The first episode, Crusade, he puts one stone in, all right? 21 episodes later, he puts the second stone in. So it's classic Smallville stretching out the story with filler episodes, right?
Nobody's moving at speed.
No. Did he wipe the blood off of it? Or did he just put it in there with the blood? I forget.
I think he just put it in there.
It's like, okay, sure.
That's interesting. I don't remember. I feel like he should have. Now I'm just upset.
Yeah. But while this is going on, Lionel... as at the mansion, he shows up to kind of come collect on his threat to Lex about Lana. Now, again, I keep tying this back to Tempest in season one. Very similar to season one, Lionel comes to visit Lex in the mansion as a natural disaster is incoming. They have their confrontation. So lots of familiar Smallville things here, but amped up to the next level. So good on him for that. You know, they're arguing about the stones, and Lex is like, "Look, I don't have one." And but he tells Lionel he'll take him to where he can use the stones. He's like, what good is the key if you know where the lock is? So I thought that was good Luther maneuvering between the two of them here.
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell it's one of those things where you're like, well, Lex is definitely his son.
Perfect line of dialogue and then action 1-2 punch. He's like, I don't have the stone. And then when Clark puts the stone in, it activates like all three of them. And it blows Lionel across the room because he has the stone in his pocket as he's telling Lex he doesn't have the stone. I thought that was great.
A nice little bit of, I guess, editing and stage direction there.
And he's convulsing on the floor, and Lex kind of crawls up to him. And this is when you really start to see Lex kind of take the turn, you know, at least in this episode, because he hasn't really been, other than like crazy plots where, you know, people get split into two or get possessed and stuff. Lex has not been straight up kind of evil or bad guy at this point, straight up. But he turns to Lionel and he says, "I just want you to know before you leave this earth, you did create the son you always wanted." And that's chilling. Well, that is like series finale stuff. You know, that's stuff that you would expect in a series finale of Smallville, where it's been the journey from Lex to, from Lex being a nice guy who's Clark Kent's friend to the end there. Now, brief side note, Clark gets the homing beacon on the crystal. And my theory all season had been whenever Sagith, because he's Naaman, Alexis Sagith from that Kawachi tribe legend.
I heard all about that.
So you know what I'm talking about. So people are like, why does he have the homing beacon? Whenever Sagith is near the crystal, he gets the homing beacon. It happened in Crusade. It happened in Transference. It's happening again here. So that tracks. So good on you, show. I don't know if you intentionally did that or just a happy accident, but that's how Clark, he gets the whole, I have a headache, I must go to something. And he gets the headache and super speeds over to Luther Mansion. Now, fortunately, he didn't super speed too fast, or Lex would have seen him and all this stuff like that, because Lex recovers the stone and puts it in the safe there.
Yes, where it will remain for, I'm assuming, not very long.
For like the next 5 minutes, because fortunately, everyone leaves the room because they're going to put Lionel upstairs. I like how the security guard's like, oh, we're evacuating. So he's like, take my father upstairs. I'm like, oh, I guess he doesn't really care at this point what happens to his dad. But nope. Clark, you know, Clark knows there's a ticking clock because he's seeing the clock just like we are.
He's seen the graphics. Every few minutes.
He's seen the graphics, and he knows time is of the essence. So he rips off the secret, you know, the safe room door on Lex's library there, just throws it aside, grabs the stone. But unfortunately for him, the X-ray vision doesn't show kryptonite, and there's all these kryptonite artifacts in there because, as we established earlier this season, these ancient civilizations put kryptonite around the stones to protect them. Huge plot hole, I think. They never really explain this. I don't know why things were meant for Kryptonians. There'd be kryptonite around it. Nor should there be kryptonite before Krypton explodes, but hey, there you go, right?
Yeah. I will say all the props looked pretty good, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, like those are legit. Like, it's like they rented them from like a museum and just switched out the gems for kryptonite. So anyway.
Absolutely.
So he passes out. And again, the timing is just so convenient here. Right, because we get our countdown. Clark has passed out at this point, and then Chloe comes in and finds him passed out.
What is she doing there?
Yeah, well, she went to go check on Lana. I guess ran through all the security, got all the way into Lex's library, right? And then just in the nick of time, sees Clark, sees the kryptonite, pulls him away from it as Lex is walking in the room to find this, right? And it's like Clark, I don't know if he was just like in the zone or what. But she pulls him away from the kryptonite. He immediately super speeds away. He does not stop to see what is going on and leaves Chloe to Lex's devices, huh?
Well, he's like, I have bigger fish to fry. Goodbye. It's very strange. But I get it because he's trying to protect himself. But it does strike me as rather strange.
Yeah, I mean, it's just convenient to like, oh, can't let people know who I know and all this stuff. Now, I did skip where Lex was taking Lana to the chopper. I was like, where is Lex during this? When Clark breaks
in? Oh, yeah. Like, why are you getting in a chopper? It's going to be bad. There are things falling from the sky.
This is a Superman-related story. Helicopters are dangerous. Like, this is the one constant in all things Superman is do not be involved with a helicopter, right?
Absolutely.
Now, this is, and, you know, kind of jumping back, right? This is, Lana's leaving. Lex wants the crystal farm. He's like, hey, Lana, here's the deal. I really do need the stone, right? She's like, I don't have it. He's like, okay, enough of that. I know you have it. And then he just snaps, like, where is it? And he grabs the purse, and he's going through it, like, whoa, okay. And he's kind of really showing his true colors here, I think.
It's very, where's the trigger?
Where's the trigger? You want to give it to an ordinary citizen? But yeah, Lex kind of snaps here, because he's been playing it cool and trying to get it that his way, not working, so he snaps and grabs the purse arm, like, wow. And even Lana's like, this wasn't about me at all. This is about this power. These stones and all that. Now, this is where the creepiness starts to happen because they really set up, you know, Lexana. Talk about another ship, which goes on later on the show. Not a fan of that at all.
Oh, boy.
But he's like, Lana, you mean more than me than you know. And then she kind of leaves and, like, she kind of looks back at him like, ooh. But, yes, they're planting seeds for that to be a ship as well, folks, unfortunately. So,
gird yourselves.
Yeah, exactly. So, we just saw him snap at Lana. He comes in. Of course, if I were Lex, I'd be pretty pissed too, because my library safe has been destroyed and the most precious artifact I've gotten is missing. And Chloe's there. She's like, oh, I don't know. It was like this when I came in. Of course, he doesn't believe her, but she is telling the truth.
Why wouldn't he, I guess?
Yeah, well, I mean, how could she have done that? You know, it's like, you know, but again, he makes all these wrong assumptions about Chloe. He's like, you know about the crystals and all this. And she knows nothing about it. All she knows is Clark's secret.
But she knows a lot. You know, like, he's not wrong in that thinking that she is perhaps hiding something from him.
Mm-hmm.
Or that she might be a potential useful ally to him. But he just is wrong in exactly how that manifests, I suppose.
Yeah, his premise is correct, but his findings are incorrect.
Yeah. Well said.
Because she knows about Clark's secret. She knows nothing about these stones of power. But he's freaking out at her. He's like, he's like grabs her and like drags him with him. So he's getting, Lex Luthor's pretty hands-off guy, but now he's getting kind of physical. He's snatching perches. He's grabbing women by the arm, dragging them along. So meanwhile, at the Kent house, Jason, we have some insight into Jason and his mom. Because they're trying, he's like, you need to go find your mom. He's like, I can't find her. But then he gets Martha with a shotgun. He's like, a mother always knows her son's deep, dark secrets. That kind of shows what they got going on there.
Yeah. Everyone's got a deep, dark secret.
Of course, it's not only is it a comic book show, it's a CW show. So that's twice as many deep, dark secrets, right?
Totally. Absolutely.
He does have a line here. He's like, when my mother came to Smallville, she thought the Luthers would lead us to the stones, but it wasn't them. It was a farm boy. So.
And every time someone mentions the farm boy, it just reminds me of in Minnesota, where it's like, where did you train? On a farm?
It's like, well, actually, yes.
Truly that, and I will find him. Are some of my favorite Zod moments of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, there's not one Zod I don't like. I think all the Zods are great in all the versions. Jason is going to shoot Martha here. I mean, he's not messing around. But then Jonathan, you know, in his Dukes of Hazzard style, breaks his chair, tackles Jason. You know, you have a scuffle. You know, Jason eventually gets to the upper hand.
This fight, there's a lot of real creative camera moves in this fight. Kind of like in the opening fight, because I guess we couldn't get stunties for this episode because it was too expensive. But there's a lot of really quick cuts in this, which is funny to me and sort of flags, like, we shot this quickly. We don't know how well it's going to go. Just like, cut, 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 cut.
It's kind of like episode 3 when Palpatine fights with a lightsaber, but they didn't have CGI. That's kind of what's going on here.
Yeah, that's a very salient observation.
But, you know, unfortunately, you know, Jason's got a good 20, 25 years on Mr. Kent. Mm-hmm. So he gets in with the shotgun. Martha and Jonathan are kind of there helpless. But then the meteor shower comes. It's here, right? And you know, we don't see what happens, but it's implied the house gets, you know, we see the house gets hit, but it's implied they also get hit. So, like, hey, they could have killed off one of the kids if they wanted, but definitely Jason is gone.
Does anyone believe that?
No. But, you know, Jason, this is the last time we see Jason Teague on Smallville. Yeah. Dean Winchester, Jensen Ackles. I use all three names interchangeably because he's the same guy in my head.
Jason Todd.
Jason Todd. Also Jason Todd. Very good. Very good. Yeah. And then he's off to 15 years on Supernatural. So good for you, Jason. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, I mean, he made the right career move. Sorry for not supposed to swear.
So they're saved by the meteor there, and the meteor shower is coming. And you know, I mentioned stock footage earlier. I know for a fact, because I made a note of this, I'm like, I bet they reuse this. Clark had a nightmare or a fear, toxin, vision in an earlier episode this season called Scare.
Isn't it always?
Exactly. And it's about a meteor shower, a second meteor shower that hit Smallville. And I'm like, I bet they're going to reuse this, because I didn't remember. They totally reused shots from it. But again, it's smart production, right? Because they've already spent that money.
It is very smart, and it's especially smart if you have a very, like, effects and production heavy episode. Like, if this is running longer than normal, whether or not they intended that with adding in the first scene, you've got to cut the budget somewhere, and they're clearly not cutting it on guest stars.
Well, they're not cutting on that. They're not cutting on helicopter crashes, because as you said, it's pretty dangerous to be flying a helicopter during a meteor shower. And that's exactly what happens to Lana. They kind of lose control, and, you know, that
kind of
that mid-2000 CGI kind of rears its head. But, you know, what are they going to do? Safety first, right?
It's not too bad. Mm-hmm. It's only really bad in the wide.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they're good on the tight. You know what the best helicopter crash literally in any movie? Terminator Salvation.
I haven't seen it.
So it's good. You know, I actually really like Terminator Salvation. I mean, it's not T1 or T2, but it's the best non-T1 or T2 thing outside of those movies. Other than, you know, Sarah Connor Chronicles was good too. But as far as movies go, I recommend it. So anyway.
Cool.
It's just a great one shot. Christian Bale's in. He goes in the helicopter and you kind of stay with him while it crashes. It's a really cool shot. McGee, decent director. But anyway, moving on. He could have directed Superman. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah, there you go.
So, during this, we have our Clark saving the little boy, because we see that the blockade is kind of falling apart. This little boy drops his toy. Clark, this was a stand-up and cheer Superman moment, him saving this little boy, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's, I mean, is this the first time that he's really, truly Superman? In that classic sense?
Yes, this is his commencement, Ashley.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. I forgot what episode we were. I thought we were talking about Booster.
Well, he's always usually kind of worked in the shadows, but at this point, crisis is happening. Like, he doesn't care if somebody sees him or not, but he saves that kid. And it is an epic shot,
cute,
and you're right.
Cute little kid.
They use it in like the opening credits and the commercials and everything, right? And then he kind of, I kind of got choked up. I was like, this is great. This is what I want to see a Superman do. I don't want to see him just floating over a house and not helping people.
Yeah, absolutely not. What's the point?
And the dad's like, thank you. And he's like, go. And it's a great little moment. Clark, he has this final stone. He brings it to the cave. The three become one. Of course, it's in the shape. I'm doing it now on the video. You can't see me, listeners, but it's the Superman pentagram. Is that what it's called? I mean, pentagram is like, means other things, but yeah, everybody knows what I mean. And the three stones become one. And I think to myself, and I've always said this about Smallville season four, I like a very clean, simple origin. I wish Jor-El had just put one crystal in the ship, and you take the crystal and you throw it, and it becomes the Fortress of Solitude. Why all this roundabout to try and build the fortress? So.
Yeah, because this is the sunstone, right? More or less. Which is so, this is so funny. Like the elemental reference is so like, early mid aughts.
Yeah, it's Avatar, all that stuff. That was really
absolutely. But you know, Avatar is ironically the one that does it best, and that's a children's show.
Yeah. Very good, very good. But see, it slowly rises up, and he grabs the crystal, right? And meanwhile, Lex has brought Chloe to the cave, and this is where he's like, "I know you know what's going on here, Chloe. You're in the middle of all this thing, Smallville. You know." And again, he's right on track. He's just on the wrong. He's on the sub track. He's not on the right track. And
totally.
they see the secret, you know, portal opening. You know, I have a counter on the show. I call it knockouts that keeps Clark secret, because a lot of people get knocked out, so Clark keeps a secret.
Oh yeah, I've heard there's a ton of brain damage on the show.
Oh, big time concussions, right? And I thought for sure, because I watch this in a while, right? And I'm like, oh, well, Chloe kind of knocks Lex out, right? And goes up to the opening, right? But no, you'd think in any other episode, if this wasn't a season finale, that's what would happen. But since the season finale, she throws him up against the wall, he kind of falls over, but he doesn't pass out.
Right, as if we were supposed to believe that she's strong enough to do that.
Well, that happens all the time on this show. It's like a kick to the head, knocked out. You know, it's like a karate chop to the neck, knocked out. No.
You can knock someone out with a well-placed kick to the head. I'll buy that.
If you're kind of a martial artist, maybe, but...
you just got to get him right in the temple.
That's right. It's all about the pressure points, people.
This has been Self-Defense Corner.
Yeah. So Lex gets up, and Chloe is also get up, and they move closer and closer to this portal. Right. And then Clark, when he grabs the crystal, it's like this whole like lightning and all this stuff. And we have a big burst of light and everything goes to white. And then we see Lytle. He's laying in bed there. Where Lex left him. We zoom in on his eye. And he's got a Kryptonian eye. What does mean?
Dun. Who knows? You know, you've watched the show.
I guarantee you they did not know when they did that. They're like, this might be interesting. You know, because Lytle, he'd been bad, he'd been good, he was bad again. You know, they kind of play that kind of ping pong with him. And, you know, that, for better or for worse, you know, 9 times out of 10, I hate that when they do with villains. Like Siler on Heroes. I hated that.
Yeah.
Like, be a hero or be a villain. But with Lytle, I just love John Glover so much, I'm glad they kept keeping him around. So he has a whole new plot line with that going on next season. And then, hey, we get Clark in the Arctic. We know it was inevitable.
Yeah. AKA a mountain just outside of Vancouver?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. And Tom Welling tells some funny stories about this filming as
Whistler.
Well. But so, you know, I'll give the Smallville crystals this credit. You know, they make it real hard to go find them and collect them. But once you grab it, it takes you right where you need to go. If you think about the old, like Christopher Reeve movie, Superman the movie, he's got to grab the crystal. He's got to trek up north. He's got to find the spot. See, so I think it's a wash, I guess, on the crystals, huh?
Yeah, the Kryptonian crystals are a cowardly and tricky lot, depending on your continuity. They look great, though, and they feel very Silver Age. So even though they're silly, it's kind of like the Jewel Mountains. Like when they mentioned that on Krypton, I was very excited. So you can't escape the crystals, but are they effective in any continuity? No.
The thing is with the crystal here in his hand, right? You can tell like it's a blue object. And they're like,
oh, yeah.
They did not complete the special effects. Like, maybe they just said, well, we don't really, again, they're going over budget. They're spending a lot of money. They're probably like, well, we don't really see it that well, so let's just leave it. But it's so funny.
Yeah, just hold this. Maybe we'll blue screen it. Who knows?
Exactly. But I was like, it clearly does not look like the very intricate, you know, Superman Pentagon crystal.
Absolutely
that he used before. It's just this flat blue object. And I wonder if they, I do wonder if, like, they were like, that's the one thing they decided to just stop. They're like, all right, fine. Just nobody's going to care. No one's going to be sitting here talking about it in 15 years on a podcast.
Ha ha, joke's on you.
What kind of losers would do that? Right here, people. So last shot of Smallville itself, Lois. She, you know, we left Lois when she was at the brigade, the barricade. She pulls over her car to look at Smallville, and she sees it like in devastation, and she cries. And that shows you kind of her character has gone a long way from this season, because she didn't want to be there. She's derogatory towards the town, farming, all that stuff, right? But, you know, as we saw earlier, she thanks the Kents for letting them stay there. She, you know, kind of makes nice with Clark before she leaves. Like, it shows the difference between where she was at the beginning and where she is now, because she's crying for this town she didn't even want to be in to begin with.
Yeah, but she's going to be fine.
She'll be fine. She's not going to be there a while. Well, actually, she will be there a while, but eventually she'll leave. So, Lana in the helicopter. Pilot is dead. She crawls out.
Yeah, a very fake arm.
Yeah, totally. It's like the fakest arm in anything ever is Samuel L. Jackson's arm in Jurassic Park. Am I right?
Yes.
That is like...
But this is a close second.
That's close second, indeed. I think we're back in business. And Lana, she claws her way out of the helicopter. And then we see, again, the pentagram shape. They've decided to embrace that now with everything Kryptonian. We see this black ship, and you don't know what's in it, you know? And then Lana crawls up to it, and then we see that it's going to open. You're like, what's going to be in there? Is it going to be Zod? Is it going to be Brainiac? Is it going to be... It could be all these things. It could be neither. We'll see. But you're hooked. You know something's going to come out of this spaceship. And then finally, we get Clark back in the Arctic, and he kind of holds the crystal up. They've decided to put the special effects back now when it floats out of his hand.
Yeah, truly.
Floats in front of him. Then it kind of points to where it needs to go. So then he grabs it, throws it, and we hear like the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That John Williams and Spo.
Yeah, it's what they use for the rest of the show for, like, quote unquote, the Blur theme or the Hero theme. And it's the first time we hear it here, I believe. And I miss the John Williams because in season two, it's these weird things that they, like, I don't know if they license it out or what or how it works. You think everybody owns everything, it's WB, but who knows? They actually use the John Williams music. Yeah, who knows how this works? But they actually use the John Williams themes then. When they were talking about Krypton, like in the episode with Christopher Reeve, when he was on, they used those themes. And I wish they had reused them here, but again, forging your own identity, I get it. And then it comes towards the camera, and we get a to-be-continued, and what an epic way, because we know what's coming, the Fortress of Solitude, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Which everyone, I imagine, has been holding out for at this point.
Yes. We're like, all right, here we go. Superman Begins, coming up next. Not to confuse with Batman Begins, which you saw a 10-minute promo for during this episode, if you watched it, in 2005 on the WB.
Clark. Great. Would you help me secure the truck? You're gonna have to go without me.
What?
Do I have to remind you, Clark, that the last time we had a meteor shower was full of kryptonite?
If the same thing happens today, it could kill you. You have to come with us.
I spoke to Jor-El. He told me I have to find the other two stones right now and unite it with the one in the cave.
No! You're my son! You're not gonna go on some kind of suicide mission!
Clark, you might be stronger than steel, but you're not invincible. I know, Dad. But I'm the only one who can do this. All right. I want you to listen to me right now. All the years that your mother and I spent raising you from a wide-eyed toddler running around on this farm to the man who is standing in front of me right now, whisper this moment. You do this, son. You make us proud.
Commencement got a 9.3 out of 10 on IMDb. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 3.5 out of 5. So, Ashley, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Commencement?
I would give Commencement a solid B+. I think it's truly so much better than I expected it to be, especially with the high school tropes. I think are very silly, but I can understand from a production standpoint. This is where I feel like, having not watched the seasons that led up to this, this is where we're starting the engine on the cheap boat that is Smallville. I'm losing it, the strains of my metaphor. Things are really getting going. Gears are starting to turn. He's acting like Superman. Lex is great and Lois is great. I really don't know what much more I could ask for this, so I think a B+, and I think this should be the standard by which all episodes are made going forward. We'll see when I watch them all if that's what happened.
That's right. You have 217 to go. So, or I guess 216, so because you have watched one more.
There you go.
Now, yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to give this a B+. And I know that's low for a finale, at least for me, because I've given all the other finales like A's, A+'s, A-minuses at this point. But there's so much contrivance here. You know, like that's what kind of keeps it from being A. Like Lana had to give him the crystal, and this had to happen here, and they had to go there. Like, so much contrivance, and then the contrivance of a second meteor shower. Like that is like, that is stupid. Like, I love some level, but that is stupid. Okay, like Chloe says, it's like we have some kind of extraterrestrial, you know, bullseye or something. But again, all the stuff that you mentioned kind of elevates it. Like the fact that Clark is being more superheroic, and Lex is really starting to show this flashes of his instability and his villainy and his selfishness. And it sets up a lot of cool things that you want to see the fortress. You want to see who's in that spaceship. Like, we're done with Smallville now. We should be like the town.
Truly.
but guess what, guys, we got 6 more years of this. So, finding a way to keep the show called Smallville, but them not going to Smallville High School, it is different. And you know, as you said, you know, they look kind of old, so it's about time they started, like, being more in the quote-unquote adult world, right?
It's not even that they look old, but, like, these are fully grown people, so they look mature, you know? So for teenagers, they look old, but, I mean, they look great. They all still look great.
Yes, that's true, that's true. You know, you can see a thing like Shazam, which came out this summer, right?
Yes.
Those kids look like they're high schoolers. Like, those kids look like kids.
Because they were, yeah, absolutely.
Like, they've, and even, you know, when Supergirl did a Midvale episode, when they saw them as kids, those were
like
kids.
Yeah, that
was cute. So I think, you know, they've really gotten better about that. Just not just superheroes, but in general, like television shows, like the 90210s of the world, like, they don't have 40-year-olds playing teenagers anymore. Maybe 25-year-olds, but they're not 40-year-olds. So.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's a little closer, at least.
Yes. So there you go. B+ for you. B+ for me. We are in alignment there. All right, as for the tally board, settle in, guys, because we have this episode and then some final tally board corrections, updates, and cleanup for season 4, with this being the season finale. But for commencement, we have a +1 for Blue Shirt Red Jacket. That brings us to 25 so far in the show. We have a +1 for episode title set in episode. That brings us to 36 so far. We have Lana kills. Yes, she's finally killed again. This one's for you, Matrix. We have a +1. So she is now at 2. Lana has killed 2 people and hopefully many more as the series progresses. Now we have a +1 for Lois arm punches, because Lois gives Clark an arm punch in their last scene in the loft there. And this is the category we're adding. Our stats guy, Corey Moore, as always, has come through with some stats on that. We have 4 so far in the series. We had 1 in Devoted at the end when she leaves from her initial 4-episode arc when Lois leaves Smallville. We have 2 in Lucy, 1 from when Lucy first shows up, and then 1 from the end of the episode when she and Clark admit they're friends. So we have 4 Lois arm punches so far in the show. That's a very signature move. There were many GIFs or GIFs of it. I still go back and forth on that pronunciation depending on the way the people around me pronunciate it. But anyway, finally, we have possession count, and that's a +1 because Isabel possessed Lana again for the final time, and that brings us to 16 so far in the show. Now, before we move on to the Bechdel test, I do have some other categories to update. As I mentioned, yeah, we did the Lois arms punches, so that's taken care of. We're sitting at 4 now, so that's going to be a new category. There is an update to the season 4 showers. Corey pointed out that in Spirit, the student who died in Redux, who was in Shimmer and Redux in the first couple seasons, the actor came back as a different student. He was in the locker room with a towel when Dawn as Lana was talking to him. So we're going to add that as a shower scene. So that brings us to 7. We were sitting at 6. That brings us to 7 season 4 showers. But, big announcement, we are expanding the shower list. Because, believe it or not, guys, there were less showers in season 4 than there were in season 1. And we are going to add up the showers for the entire show so far and move it forward for the rest of the show. Call it the shower count, or if I don't think anything more clever, maybe I'll change the name of it come season 5. But for now, we're calling it the shower count. And let's go back to the beginning. In season 1, we had a shower and metamorphosis. That was Bug Boy. That brings us to one. We had a shower with a football coach. He was in the sauna, so we're going to count that. In Hothead, so that's two. We had the shower in the girls' locker room. That all the girls taking showers in there when Clark uses X-ray vision, so that's three. Sean Kelvin and the classmate that he was chasing after, which I remember, man, I remember that was one of our first episodes, and cool, obviously, the fifth episode of this series. Me and Nick Ryan Mendoza were joking about how she was running away from him in the bathroom, where a large bathroom it was. So that brings us to four. Man, they had four showers in the first five episodes of this show, guys. So showers, that's what we're expanding. Showers are not just a season four thing, as I discovered. So then we had had showers in Shimmer, two different instances of it. We had Clark and Pete in the locker room in their towels. And then we had Victoria taking a bath in Shimmer. So that's plus two for there, which brings us to six. And then Clark and Pete in the locker rooms in Leech when Clark is pretty exhausted after not having his powers for the first time after gym class. So that's seven showers in season one. Season two, we just had two showers. We had the college guy in his tub in red when the U.S. Marshal or the private detective who claimed to be U.S. Marshal kills him with the radio. So that's plus one for there. And then in Visage, Lana enters her bedroom with a towel after her shower, and that is when Tina as Chloe is going through Lana's closet dresser. So two showers in season two. That brings us to nine so far. Then season three had two showers, one being Asylum. We have the meteor freaks walking out of the shower in their towels, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and when they're talking to Van. So that's a plus one for Asylum. And then another plus one for Delete, because Chloe and Lana's epic battle concludes in the girls' locker room. That brings us to 11 so far, and when you add in the 7 from season 4, that brings us to 18 showers so far in this show. So 4 seasons, 18 showers, so you can see why I think it's justified its own category. So we're going to keep the shower count going. You know, showers, baths, people in towels, okay? Not swimming, okay? If we did swimming pools and lakes and things like that, and it would be a lot larger count, but we're gonna put this specifically to shower, bath, sauna related activity when people are in towels or naked taking a shower. So there you have it, 18 for the shower count so far in the show. And then finally we have our From Metropolis count. We're gonna call this one ... From Metropolis. And again, Corey Moore with the stats. We have a total of 14 times in the show. So when Lex says doctors or specialists, lawyers from Metropolis, this is the episode list. We have Jitters, Rogue, Hug, Kinetic, three times, and Nicodemus. That is really the one that stuck out of my head, Nicodemus. Flying in those doctors from Metropolis. Vortex, Duplicity, Ryan, Dichotic, Visage, Whisper, and Scare. So all those added together, that brings us to 14 times that Lex has mentioned someone ... from Metropolis. So there you have it, guys. I know that was a really long tally board, but it's the end of the season. I want to do some cleanup and some clarification on some categories. And so, yeah, there you have it. And we will see what the tally board has in store for us in season 5. Bechdel test. This episode is a pass because Chloe and Lois talk about things that are not Clark or man related.
Hey, look at that. That's pretty good.
So there you have it, guys. Commencement. We've come to an end of season 4. It's been quite a journey. I've reassessed my stance on season 4, as I knew many of you would. I know many of you listeners are like, I love season 4. It's my favorite season. How dare you? Hey, you guys, you know, it's not my favorite now, but I like it a lot more than I did. And that's the point of this podcast, revisiting this stuff, having fresh eyes on things I used to love and still love. And it's a lot of fun. So Ashley, thanks so much for joining me this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, if people want to find you out there on the internet, you're a lot of cool places that people, I'm sure listeners here would love to see. Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me all over the internet, including on Twitter and Instagram at Ashley V. Robinson. The V is very important because Ashley Robinson is a tall WNBA player. I don't want to fight for SEO. You can find my podcast, Geek History Lesson, at geekhistorylesson.com. And if you would like to check out my newest comic book project, Aurora and the Eagle, if you go to auroraandtheeagle.com, it will take you to the digital store where you can pre-order that.
All right. Awesome. Sounds good. You guys do some great content over there on Geek History Lesson as well.
Yeah, we do. Okay. We're fine.
I think my favorite episode, I know this was like super long time ago, but my favorite episode was the If You Guys Were in Charge of DC Comics.
Oh, yeah. That was like first year.
Yeah. I remember that. I was like, because that's exactly what I would do. What Jason had said about just starting at year zero with everybody.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's like, if you're going to go back to number one, just really go back. There shouldn't be a Nightwing. There should be Batman doing year one and stuff. So anyway, lots of good stuff over there from those guys. So
thank you.
All right, well, it's been a lot of fun talking about the fourth season finale of Smallville Commencement, and we are going to go on a brief hiatus. We're going to have a mailbag in between before we go to season five, so just to kind of come up for air here, in a couple of weeks we'll get a mailbag, take a couple more weeks off after that. I'll get ahead of the game in recording so I can start pumping these episodes out on a weekly basis in season five and get a head start. So it's going to be a few weeks till we start season five coverage, but that's still shorter than the gap between season four and season five in Smallville in real life. So expect a mailbag coming up where we read your email. So yeah, if you guys have any emails or messages you want to send me for us to read on air and respond to you there, please do so. We'll do our best to read them out and answer your questions and read your comments on the air in the next mailbag episode. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.